The car, however, had reached the end of its tether. With two smart clunks, the doors flew open, and Harry felt his seat tip sideways. Next thing he knew, he was sprawled on the damp ground. Loud thuds told him that the car was ejecting their luggage from the boot. Hedwig's cage flew through the air and burst open. She rose out of it with a loud, angry screech and sped off towards the castle without a backwards look. Then, dented, scratched, and steaming, the car rumbled off into the darkness, its rear lights blazing angrily. "Come back!" Ron yelled after it, brandishing his broken wand. "Dad'll kill me!" But the car disappeared from view with one last snort from its exhaust. "Can you believe our luck?" said Ron miserably, bending down to pick up Scabbers the rat. "Of all the trees we could have hit, we had to get one that hits back." He glanced over his shoulder at the ancient tree, which was still flailing its branches threateningly. "Come on," said Harry wearily. "We'd better get up to the school." It wasn't at all the triumphant arrival they had pictured. Stiff, cold, and bruised, they seized the ends of their trunks and began dragging them up the grassy slope towards the great oak front doors. "I think the feast's already started," said Ron, dropping his trunk at the foot of the front steps and crossing quietly to look through a brightly lit window. "Hey, Harry, come and look. It's the sorting!" Harry hurried over, and together he and Ron peered in at the great hall. Innumerable candles were hovering in mid-air over four long, crowded tables, making the golden plates and goblets sparkle. Overhead, the bewitched ceiling, which always mirrored the sky outside, sparkled with stars. Through the forest of pointed black Hogwarts hats, Harry saw a long line of scared-looking first-years filing into the hall. Ginny was amongst them, easily visible because of her vivid Weasley hair. Meanwhile, Professor McGonagall, a bespectacled witch with her hair in a tight bun, was placing the famous Hogwarts sorting hat on a stool before the newcomers. Every year this aged old hat, patched, frayed and dirty, sorted new students into the four Hogwarts houses, Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Slytherin. Harry well remembered putting it on exactly 1 year ago, and waiting, petrified, for its decision as it muttered aloud in his ear. For a few horrible seconds he had feared that the hat was going to put him in Slytherin, the house which had turned out more dark witches and wizards than any other. But he had ended up in Gryffindor, along with Ron, Hermione, and the rest of the Weasleys. Last term, Harry and Ron had helped Gryffindor win the house championship, beating Slytherin for the first time in 7 years. A very small, mousy-haired boy had been called forward to place the hat on his head. Harry's eyes wandered past him to where Professor Dumbledore, the headmaster, sat watching the sorting from the staff table, his long silver beard and half-moon glasses shining brightly in the candlelight. Several seats along, Harry saw Gilderoy Lockhart, dressed in robes of aquamarine, and there at the end was Hagrid, huge and hairy, drinking deeply from his goblet. "Hang on," Harry muttered to Ron. "There's an empty chair at the staff table. Where's Snape?" Professor Severus Snape was Harry's least favourite teacher. Harry also happened to be Snape's least favourite student. Cruel, sarcastic, and disliked by everybody except the students from his own house, Slytherin, Snape taught potions. "Maybe he's ill," said Ron, hopefully. "Maybe he's left," said Harry, "because he missed out on the Defence Against Dark Arts job again." "Or he might have been sacked," said Ron enthusiastically. "I mean, everyone hates him."
"Or maybe," said a very cold voice right behind them, "he's waiting to hear why you two didn't arrive on the school train."
Harry spun around. There, his black robes rippling in a cold breeze, stood Severus Snape.
He was a thin man with sallow skin, a hooked nose, and greasy, shoulder-length black hair, and at this moment he was smiling in a way that told Harry he and Ron were in very deep trouble. "Follow me," said Snape. Not daring even to look at each other, Harry and Ron followed Snape up the steps into the vast, echoing entrance hall, which was lit with flaming torches. A delicious smell of food was wafting from the great hall, but Snape led them away from the warmth and light down a narrow stone staircase that led into the dungeons. "In," he said, opening a door halfway down the cold passageway and pointing. They entered Snape's office, shivering. The shadowy walls were lined with shelves of large glass jars, in which floated all manner of revolting things Harry didn't really want to know the name of at the moment. The fireplace was dark and empty. Snape closed the door and turned to look at them. "So," he said softly, "the train isn't good enough for the famous Harry Potter and his faithful sidekick Weasley. Wanted to arrive with a bang, did we, boys?"
"No, sir, it was the barrier at King's Cross. It—"
"Silence," said Snape coldly. "What have you done with the car?" Ron gulped. This wasn't the first time Snape had given Harry the impression of being able to read minds. But a moment later he understood, as Snape unrolled today's issue of the Evening Prophet. "You were seen," he hissed, showing them the headline. "Flying Ford Anglia Mystifies Muggles." He began to read aloud. "Two muggles in London, convinced they saw an old car flying over the post office tower. At noon in Norfolk, Mrs. Hetty Bailey's, while hanging out her washing, Mr. Angus Fleet of Peebles reported to police 6 or 7 muggles in all. I believe your father works in the Misuse of Muggle Artifacts office," he said, looking up at Ron and smiling still more nastily. "Dear, dear, his own son!" Harry felt as though he'd just been walloped in the stomach by one of the mad tree's larger branches. If anyone found out Mr. Weasley had bewitched the car, he hadn't thought of that. "I noticed in my search of the park that considerable damage seems to have been done to a very valuable whomping willow," Snape went on. "That tree did more damage to us than we—" Ron blurted out. "Silence!" snapped Snape again. "Most unfortunately, you are not in my house, and the decision to expel you does not rest with me. I shall go and fetch the people who do have that happy power. You will wait here." Harry and Ron stared at each other, white-faced. Harry didn't feel hungry any more. He now felt extremely sick. He tried not to look at a large, slimy something suspended in green liquid on a shelf behind Snape's desk. If Snape had gone to fetch Professor McGonagall, head of Gryffindor House, they were hardly any better off. She might be fairer than Snape, but she was still extremely strict. 10 minutes later, Snape returned, and sure enough it was Professor McGonagall who accompanied him. Harry had seen Professor McGonagall angry on several occasions, but either he had forgotten just how thin her mouth could go, or he had never seen her this angry before. She raised her wand the moment she entered. Harry and Ron both flinched, but she merely pointed it at the empty fireplace, where flames suddenly erupted. "Sit!" she said, and they both backed into chairs by the fire. "Explain!" she said, her glasses glinting ominously. Ron launched into the story, starting with the barrier at the station refusing to let them through.
"So we had no choice, Professor. We couldn't get on the train. Why didn't you send us a letter by owl?"
"I believe you have an owl," Professor McGonagall said coldly to Harry. Harry gaped at her. Now she said it, that seemed the obvious thing to have done.
I didn't think."
"That," said Professor McGonagall, "is obvious." There was a knock on the office door, and Snape, now looking happier than ever, opened it. There stood the headmaster, Professor Dumbledore.